Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 51. I'm Jerry Iverson with my guest, Steve Boimer, a champion of change, one of the people of faith acting for the climate, recently honored at the White House. If you're new to this podcast and would like more information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue after the interview. I had the pleasure of meeting Steve and his family in Florida at his invitation on one of my speaking tours several years ago. I'll include a link in the show notes to the pictures and my journal entry of that visit as post number 257 under Travels on the Simple Living Works site. I'll also link to pictures and information from the White House about the recent Champions of Change, People of Faith for the Climate event. Steve, tell us in detail how you became a White House honoree.
It all began when my pastor nominated me many months ago. In fact, I had actually forgotten about it. It had been quite a while. And when I was in Washington, the organizer of the program that's called Champions for Change, it's a program that the White House has initiated soon after the first term of election in 2008 to honor everyday hero people in various areas. There's ones for women veterans, and there's ones for different community things that go on. So there was an effort to try to honor those kind of folks, and one of the categories that had been selected quite a while back was faith leaders for advocating for the climate. And she had mentioned that of all of the categories that they've had, and they've done this since 2009, I guess, is when it was originally started, that this was the most number of nominations that they've ever got in all those years in any category. So it made it even more of an honor to be included in that. There were 12 people selected nationally, and I was one of the 12. And that's then we were notified and asked if we could come, and that was how it transpired.
Well, it's interesting that the 12 honorees are both men and women. They're from various faith communities, several Muslims, Jewish people, number of Christians, a Hindu woman. They come from different parts of the country. It's beautifully designed. Now, I understand that the head of the EPA spoke at the event, and you also had a chance to speak at the event. So give us more of the feeling of what went on that special day.
Well, it opened up. There was a number of people that spoke. I'm not sure I can remember all the people. There was quite a parade. The Reverend Al Sharpton, I know he was one of the first that got up. There were multiple people from the administration that came. There was a gentleman who was sort of the environment advisor to the cabinet. He spoke about how the administration's responding to the environment. The gentleman that I guess he said his direct employer is the Council of Cardinals of the Catholic Church in the United States, and he had multiple trips to the Vatican and was one of the people that helped write the encyclical that Pope Francis recently released. So he was very involved in that, and his whole job, I guess, is to deal with the environment and how the Catholic Church interacts with that. He was very interesting. There was just a pretty good parade of folks that came up, all sorts of different people in different walks of life. And We had about 200 people in the audience, too, by the way. There was quite a number of people that had been invited to come. So there was a whole range of different faith leaders and pastors and priests and rabbis and all sorts of folks. So what they did is the 12, they had a split up. There were six that went up first in sort of a panel type thing. We were posed with one question from the moderator. Our moderator is the president of the Evangelical Environmental Network, and he posed a question, and we all got to respond to that. And mainly it was kind of, you know, how do you see this work, and how is it interconnected with your faith? And I responded that I felt like change, if you were looking for change to happen in within a climate area and how to interact your faith with that, that really, really began, that change began with 1,000 different small pieces to make that change occur. So it wasn't going to be that some church body or faith body was going to, you know, just send out a notice or an edict or write a position paper and suddenly everything was going to change. That it was going to take all of us that are in a faith community to respond to our faith by making everyday changes in our lives, everyday changes in the lives of the church or their congregation or temple or synagogue or mosque or whatever it might be, their workplace, advocating for better environmental sustainability in their workplace. So everything counts, and all of those pieces add up.
Well, I was delighted to see that a number of the 12 honorees were members or leaders in Interfaith Power and Light, and I was privileged to interview the executive director of Interfaith Power and Light in a previous podcast. Tell us, Steve, about some of your activities for the climate in your area of Florida.
My involvement's been just about anything that'll move forward in protecting the environment, and Florida's been an interesting place to do that. There was a recent position paper, I guess, that came out that Florida has now taken the number one position in vulnerability to any sort of climate change. So we're sitting dead center in what could be the country's most historic catastrophe if the climate continues to change, sea levels rise, because we're just a little flat sandy peninsula and we've got two oceans between us, and if those levels rise very much or there was a catastrophic hurricane, those that surge in the sea could destroy literally tens of thousands of homes and be billions of dollars worth of property damage. So while we're sitting here so vulnerable, it has been somewhat difficult to get very much moving forward on the environment, especially in the faith communities. You had mentioned Interfaith Power and Light. We had had an attempt to try to get a chapter here, and it didn't really take off real well. Actually, I was president for a little while. There's another effort in February to start another faith-based interfaith climate group that's being initiated by the Florida Council Churches, and we'll see if that has a little better traction on it. And then there's a lot of different secular things that have been involved in different advocacy organizations. But one thing that's been quite interesting is every county in Florida has a soil and water conservation district, and it's an elected position, and it's actually, you are considered an elected representative of the state of Florida. While it's county specific, it is a Florida state-based board that exists, and I serve on the Orange County board, and we have, as of recent, the last year especially, the majority of the people on the board now are really involved environmentalists and very committed. That had not been the case in the past. It had, well, sort of been a rubber stamp, I guess. I don't want to get too tossing any political bombs here, but they hadn't really done very much and hadn't spoken out when there was big developments that seemed like it was encroaching on too much green space. Water quality had never been much of an issue, but we've changed that, and we have become a very aggressive advocacy board. So it's nice to also have, as an elected official of the state of Florida, to have that platform to talk about the environment as well. And I was very clear in all the material and the people who know me there that, you know, I'm very, very much come at this from a faith perspective. I'm not from the Sierra Club or the Audubon Society or something. I'm come at it because of my, I feel it's a moral imperative for people of faith.
Excellent. Thank you, Steve. Now, more specifically, I understand that you've been working with things like church lighting and storm sewers and things like that.
Well, again, I think when I submitted the nomination, I was the only layperson out of the 12. And, you know, I just think a lot of the smaller things are really important, and they often get overlooked. And I was just truly thrilled when I got the award and got to talk to some of the people at the White House in this program, the Champions for Change, who said, that's exactly what we were looking for. And they said, so often, the people like yourself, they never, nobody ever nominates them, or nobody ever says, well, you know, what they're doing is of some value. You know, they always nominate the, you know, founder and executive director of some organization, or somebody that's been a professor or a bishop something or other somewhere. And so a lot of those people were the other 11. But she said, you know, we look for people like you that say, let's do some stuff and make a difference and let that sort of ripple effect, like a throwing a rock in the lake, happen with other churches and other people that see this is a great thing to have happen. It fits well with our theology of protecting God's creation. And the other thing that helps very well, especially in my congregation, is because it saves a lot of money. And so people who are not always there theologically, when they see the LED bulbs going in and the power bill starting to cut back, and we put a new roof in and intentionally selected a eco-friendly roof that had significant insulation so it would keep the heat from coming inside the building. And then it was also a very white reflective material on the outside, so it reflected the sun, which is important in Florida, where it's 90 degrees half of the year. And so it, those kinds of things, we actually got an $1,100 rebate from the power company for that roof. and we've seen money savings for that. So those things have been widely accepted by everybody in the congregation, because if they don't always understand the theology, they understand that our light bills are less. And the drain labeling came about. We wanted to do an environmental project after we had dedicated the Sunday around Earth Day, and we did an entire worship service dedicated to Earth and God's creation. It was hugely successful, and it really helped a lot of people better understand what the issues were from a theology point of view. But the weekend after that, we wanted to do something special, so I had been involved with Orange County Environmental Protection on this drain labeling program that they have. Florida has a lot of older sewer systems, and the drain intakes on the street run directly into the lakes. Apparently 30, 40 years ago, nobody ever thought that would be a bad idea, but unless you can go back and redo all those, the best thing is to try to help people understand that they shouldn't rake their grass clippings down that hole, or they shouldn't throw their empty water bottle down there, because it is not a receptacle for trash. It is a drain that goes right into the lake that may be a block or two away. So they put these we glue these metal signs on there, which sort of explains that and has some picture things about, with an X, about trash and stuff. And then we go around door to door and hang door hangers and say, you know, we've been here and here's what we did and this is why we did this. And many people, when they saw us out there, they came, what are you doing? And so we explained and we said, hey, we're the church and we're labeling these drains so your lake stays clean and pure. And that's what people in the church do, is, you know, we honor God's creation by trying to keep it intact.
Excellent example, Steve. Well, I'd like to move on to talk about some of your other endeavors for social justice. I know that you've been active, for example, in fair trade. Tell us about those efforts.
Well, I am one that believes that what you read in the book, the Bible, you should try to live that out as best you can. It's not just a book to put on the coffee table. It's something that you should try to live out. And so many of the social justice issues that I feel are important in society, again, I can circle back pretty clearly to my faith perspective. And I do feel that, for example, fair trade, and been involved in that one way or another, and supporting that. And we've done some things even at several churches that I've been able to get fair trade coffee and fair trade chocolate. We've been able to do some of that even in our synod, where it's been able to be disseminated out to Lutheran churches throughout Florida and the Bahamas. And I think it just goes back that even there is some things that Martin Luther wrote about that in the Ten Commandments, his commentaries on that is that you shouldn't covet your neighbor's properties. But his feeling was that you had to take that to the next step. It wasn't just not coveting them, but you needed to support your neighbors and help them to have a better life. And part of that is the fair trade philosophy, is that if there are people that are producing coffee or sugar or even wines wherever they are in the world, that if we can use our economic power here in the United States to purchase some of those products, it can help them out. And it's just such a wonderful win-win situation. You get good coffee they get to help their kids go to school. And I've seen the fair trade coffee that many of the churches have supported in Haiti. I've actually been to the coffee co-ops up in the mountains south of Port-au-Prince, and I've personally been there on many occasions and seen how that works. And I've seen ladies walking down out of the hillside through the shrub with a gigantic bundle of coffee berries on their head, which I couldn't even hardly lift myself, and they're walking down a steep incline of the mountain in sandals with these bags of berries on their head, and they bring them in and get paid for them, and it is excellent coffee that then we can enjoy, and they get to take home some money that they can help feed their family and send their kids to school.
Well, as a successful insurance man, Steve, how did you come to embrace a simple living, and what moved you to invite me to speak to your group several years ago there in Florida?
Well, I've always thought that one of the problems in our world today, I won't just limit it to our society or to Florida or Central Florida, but it is the problem of excess, and some of that has to do with why we have such an environmental problem in some places in the world, particularly the United States, is that I think I read somewhere if everybody in the world had the same lifestyle and equivalent as people in the United States, that it would take four Earths to support that. And last time I looked, we don't have four Earths to support that. So somewhere or another, something's got to change. And I've always felt that the excess that people seem to worship here, and especially the United States, has to change. And we've got to find more sustainable ways to go about our life, because it not only degrades the environment, but it is economically unfair to our neighbors and to other people in the world. So, again, that sort of became my personal philosophy as much as a business philosophy. But
well, I was impressed when I was down there and in your restaurant that you were using very eco-friendly products.
Yeah, we had, I had sort of helped actually adult children, to do a restaurant. And we had, we actually recycled the building. It was a bank building, and we recycled that and made it feasible to use as a restaurant. And then all of our food products, I mean, we sort of predated a lot of demands now for people to know where their food comes from, but this was back 10 years ago, I guess, that we talked about we could show the source of our eggs and our beef, and we used buffalo that had been culled from wild herds in Wyoming. We had wild-caught salmon, you know, not farm salmon, which has some other issues to it. And so all those things we tried to do, our plates and stuff, we either used plates that could be washed in the dishwasher and not thrown away, or some of the to-go stuff, we used bagasse, which is a byproduct of sugarcane, which is kind of cool to have that in Florida since we grow a lot of sugarcane here. And it's the leftover pieces after you get the sugar out of it. You can create like a paper product that can be made into plates and to-go cups and to-go little clam shells to take your food out of the restaurant. And it is a totally compostable, and it doesn't hurt the environment. It's just leftovers from the sugar cane.
Excellent. Well, on a little different note, Steve, our ELCA, that's Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, churchwide bishop, Elizabeth Eaton, recently conducted a national webinar with Professor William Horn about racism in America. And I'm curious, has being part of a biracial family yourself had influence on your efforts?
Absolutely. Bill Horn, he's actually the city manager for Clearwater, Florida, which I've known Bill for many, many years, served on our Synod Council, which is an elected leadership body here in Florida, with Bill for many years. And so he and I have known each other real well and had many discussions about that issue. I am hoping that our Synod here takes up that issue. In fact, our bishop and several people, we were having some ongoing discussions about how to respond to that. Tragically, we've been sort of the site of some of the earliest issues. Trayvon Martin, that was one of the first young black men that was killed after what seems like a whole series, was here in Florida, actually here in Orlando. And so we're hoping that we can better equip the church to respond to that. And having been in a position where I've been able to see both sides, for example, my biracial son, I've been thrust into a situation where I've had to have some discussions with him about when he's driving through some of the suburbs in Central Florida and how he needs to conduct himself and when he's in different situations. And he's grown up with such comfort in whatever situation he is in that often he, for example, kind of forgets that sometimes not everybody shares his optimistic and cavalier attitude, that sometimes there are people around him that may not necessarily agree that his presence is the best thing in the world. So it's I've had to have a real conversation with him about what it means to share ethnic heritage, if you will, and how he's certainly blessed to have both of them, but has to be careful how he acts in society. And that's where I know many African American parents have had to have that discussion, because society just selects them randomly because of the color of their skin, that they must be criminal, up to no good, don't belong here, any list of very negative connotations.
Going through my notes for my visit several years ago, I noticed that your family had taken ELCA anti-racist training. Can you tell us about that experience and if that was helpful?
It was. We had gone to Chicago, my wife and I, our Synod supported that, and that's been quite a few years ago as well. We went there for a week, and there was a training program that the idea, I think, was to have people in every part of the country with this anti-racism training. And we had the training involved a lot of not just sitting down and opening a book and taking a test, but it was a lot of interactive stuff, and it was a very interracial crowd that was there. So we were all able to share different things about what it means to be who you are and how you interact and what assumptions you make. And it was really fascinating. And we did get a lot out of that. And we still hope to be able to apply some of that here in the near future.
Well, thank you for those insights, Steve. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, just thanks for the opportunity. And, I hope everyone that might be listening in just does a close examination of their own conscience and determines whether or not, you know, the things that you do in your life affect people and how that's affected. And you mentioned my business earlier. I was probably one of the few insurance brokers that supported the Affordable Care Act because I honestly felt in my heart that people needed insurance, and that's what I'm in the business of doing, so why wouldn't I support that? So that's the kind of decision making I think that your faith has to lead you to in whatever you do. So regardless of where you find yourself, you can make those calls.
You've been listening to my conversation with Steve Boimer, a champion of change, one of the people of faith acting for the climate recently honored at the White House. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. Or on my Facebook page or on our Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click window number 3. Hear about the change of focus for the Simple Living Works blog in episode 48 of this podcast and also in recent blogs. Have some wonderful response to my Earth Mama e-news, monthly e-news letter. I heard from Alicia, "That's awesome. I bookmarked the earthday.fm website. Glad to hear people playing music with worthwhile lyrics. Keep up the great work." And in regard to my Earth Mama podcast, Joyce Rouse is Earth Mama. She says, "Gerald, this is just wonderful. You have a great voice for broadcast, and I really appreciate the time and planning you put into your shows. I am very pleased to share this widely and hope it reaches out to many more for both of our entities. Thank you so much for including me in your work and this network." Blessings and best, Joyce Earth Mama Rouse. And also in regard to that podcast, Charlie Kyle of Chicago said, "Thanks for sharing this important story. Another modern-day hero like yourself." Always glad to hear from you, Charlie. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscriptions to this podcast and to our weekly blog are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe to my other podcast, the Common Good Podcast, in iTunes. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. Find details in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3, then click About. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Sharealike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. If you're new to Simple Living Works podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive lifestyle. It's not a list of rules, nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everyone's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, "Live simply, that others may simply live," as our closing theme song proclaims. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the five life standards of living more with less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre, and I've discussed those standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The three parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video, and links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Can simply live, learn to live simply so others can live.